For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number to call in is 844-320-4299. If you cannot listen to this entire show today, and you will want to hear this entire show today, then this show is rebroadcasted on Saturdays at 1 p.m. So you'll need to tune in this Saturday if you're going to miss it, if you're going to only hear the very beginning or what have you, because I have a special guest on today, and I'll get into that. But as I always say, many parts of these shows are intermingled and dovetail with each other, and I reference them and or what I've spoken about on other shows. And instead of having to repeat everything, I just reference them. So you really do need to download the podcast so that you can get the magnitude of the Federalist Papers or the conversations that I've had with other people so that you understand and can garner what Reclaiming the Republic and Republic Review is all about. That way you can become more educated and more informed. And again, one of my favorite premises is knowledge is power. So I would like to weaponize you with a lot of knowledge. That said, in local announcements, the GOP had their Lincoln Day dinner here in Spokane this last weekend, and I believe it was a great success. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to have some leadership from the Republican Party, the GOP, and some of the clubs in the local area on board, and I will talk about that in just a couple seconds as well. As always, the Friday Republican Coffee Club is meeting this week, and they have Doug Chase speaking today, or Friday, at 7 o'clock, and he is from the Spokane County Parks and Recreation. The admission is $5 for the venue and $1 for a donut. So basically, for $6, you get a coffee and a donut and have access to hear from local leaders and heroes and so forth. The venue is at the Bangkok Thai restaurant inside the Noli Brew House at 1003 East Trent. And it's right there on the Trent and Hamilton intersections. And again, it's 7 in the morning on Fridays. I have an STD for everyone. Save the date, not the sexually transmitted disease thing. So I have a save the date for everybody. Saturday, June 24th is the Spirit of America rally. I think they may have changed the name, but the Northwest Grassroots, and I'm not sure if they're working with somebody else, but I was hoping to talk to one of their leaders, John. They're having a rally over in Post Falls, and we'd like to get everybody out there, as well as, and I need to get this information so that if people want to help support or throw them some assistance with materials, resources, and the primary resource would probably be money, because they have to pay for the venue, they have to pay for things up front to do these things. And so they're hoping to create partnerships with businesses and patriots that can help support what they're doing and getting these rallies together and bringing people together. So we're getting organized, folks. So please help, please contribute, and get involved. Of course, by listening to the show, you'll get informed and get involved, and then you'll be equally and double powered by both being there and having the knowledge while you're there. I have a standing question to all. Is religious freedom, carte blanche, a constitutional right? So if at any point in time you have the passion, gumption, whatever you want to call it, to call in and discuss your feelings on religious freedom and how you read the Constitution and or your opinions, by all means, just call. It's 844-320-4299. As I said last week, this is an important election year for Spokane. And as such, I want to reach out to all the candidates, regardless of their party affiliation, and ask them if they want to call in to discuss. I'm going to give them equal time. And so as I do, and somebody does call in, I will notify whoever their opponents are to ensure that, hey, I spoke to these people. But what I want to do is ensure that the candidates have, you know, at least an appreciation for the Constitution, because every candidate raises their arm to the square and states an oath to the Constitution or to support the Constitution. So I want to make sure that, one, they're going to fulfill that oath, and two, that they're not only going to fulfill that, but they're going to be a leader as we've elected them and asked them to do that. So we want to make sure that they're constitutionally literate. Let me be clear. It is when our politicians who do not know or understand the Constitution, or even worse, do not care about the Constitution, that's when they railroad us with costly programs and despotic policies to control us. So again, I'm hoping and planning on hearing from all the candidates. As a public announcement, I am going to go on record to offer any and all contact, just to contact us here or send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we'll schedule a candidate to come on, and then we'll make sure that the opponents have the equal time to be able to come in and also speak regarding their constitutional prowess and what they believe the real issues are locally. I do control the content, and all the candidates can expect to be grilled in the equal manner, but so I'm an equal opportunity destroyer or oppressor, whatever you want to call it. I just want to make sure that we understand where these candidates are standing and who is going to be the better candidate for Spokane. So, as I said, these guys do take an oath, and the Washington Oath clearly says that they're supposed to support the Constitution. It's our job to vet these folks, and so I'm asking you to get involved, and by listening, hopefully you can get the information you need to make the best decision. That way, they can help protect us from tyranny. I do have a special guest. I may have mentioned this before, and it's definitely out on my Facebook and tweets. But before I get to him, I wanted to talk about some local guests that I'm going to be bringing in who do community work. I actually have asked Rob Chase, who does the Friday Morning Coffee Club. I want him to come in and kind of talk about, you know, how this all started. I think he inherited this in talking to him, and I want him to kind of talk about, you know, his objectives and what he wants to do, and if he's got ideas of growing that and so forth. And I wanted to get his feedback on how we can kind of unite as conservatives, people who value the Constitution, value individual liberty and so forth. We may not be completely aligned on a political party or what have you, but like I've said in my promos, I believe the Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, people in these parties, in the Republican Party, share a love and an admiration for the Constitution and individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And there's no reason why we can't come together and become a much more powerful force, not as a party, but as a people, uniting in taking back. Because as long as we're divided, the progressives will still get their guys in, or their people in, into positions of power and waste money, spending millions of dollars on some type of improvement that is not going to make you safer, not going to make you more productive or what have you. You get to a point where you can only make things so beautiful. I hope to also have somebody from the grassroots Northwest to come in and talk about their efforts. And I've also got a very special host I'm probably going to bring in first. And he's a part of the Jonah Project. And what his job is, and what he's really doing in the Jonah Project, is saving kids. And you might see some billboards and might have heard of this, but I really call him a hero. When you hear the word hero, we just throw that out to people to wear uniforms and do public service and so forth. Having been a Marine wearing a uniform for 20 years and being decorated and so forth, I don't consider myself a hero because that was my job. And I had this paradigm that as a staff NCO or as an officer, we're obligated to do that level of service, and it's expected of us. And I hear this music in my ear, so let's go to a hard break, and then we'll be right back, and I'll close on this and bring our guest in. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and as I was rudely interrupted by my commercial breaks, I'm just kidding, as I was cut off in talking about a local hero, I was kind of elucidating or clarifying and speaking to my perspective of a hero, having served in the Marine Corps and knowing that we tend to, as a society, call anybody a hero that wears a uniform. I just think that that waters down what a hero really is, because a hero really goes above and beyond their normal call, their job, and what have you. And when somebody, you know, puts their own life in danger, with somebody that's not getting paid to do that, they're not getting combat pay, then I would really consider that person a true hero. Because you know, when you're becoming a first responder, you know what you're getting into. You're going to be taking fire. You're going to be fighting fire, whatever that is. And so, to me, this gentleman that we're going to bring on from the Jonah Project, to me, is a real hero, because he takes a huge risk for himself, his family, and so forth in what he is doing. And he's literally fighting a sex cartel locally in our community. And that's why I really want to make sure that you understand what's going on and the magnitude of what is happening, so that you might be able to get engaged in helping him. Maybe you're not passionate about saving the Constitution, but you might be passionate about saving the kids. There's lots of ways, and as you can tell, I feel like I'm trying to reach into your pockets for things, because we need help. We need support. The grassroots Northwest, they need help. And I don't mind speaking for all these worthwhile organizations that need your assistance. So if there's something that gets you motivated and maybe helping, whether that's your time, whether that's financial or other resources, there are ways you can find and make available in helping these good causes. So that's why I'm trying to bring in these people and help bring more relevance to the Spokane area. So anyway, we will have him on hopefully in a week or two. As a reminder, I still have my standing question. Any caller that just feels, or listener that feels so motivated to want to talk to me about how the U.S. guarantees the freedom of religion or not, by all means, call. Our number is 844-320-4299. Today, I have a special guest bringing on Douglas V. Gibbs. He's out of California, Southern California. He's the Director of Civics and Constitutional Studies for CORE, which is the, I'm going to get this wrong, but I believe it's the Congress of Racial Equality. He is a fellow for the American Freedom Alliance, and he's the president of the Constitution Association. He's also a radio show host for KMET, and I believe he's actually supports or is a constant contributor for other radio shows. And he's an author of the 25 Myths of the United States Constitution. He's also wrote The Basic Constitution, and he also wrote The Concepts of the United States Constitution. And he has another book that's called Silence Screams, Abortion in a Virtuous Society. And so I give to you, Spokane, Douglas V. Gibbs. Mr. Gibbs, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I know I've worked, and I give a little background. I've actually worked with Mr. Gibbs a few times, of speaking at his organizations a couple of times. And so the first thing I always do, just so everybody understands, because I have my executive summary out there that's basically an encapsulation of my first book, and I ask all my guests that come in if they would please read that so that they can give me some feedback. Am I hitting the mark or what have you? And so, Mr. Gibbs, have you read the executive summary, and do you understand Republic Review? You should, because I know.
Yeah. Well, I've got the first three books, and I've read the first one and have fumbled through the other two. I haven't completed them yet. But the idea is actually a very good one, a very constitutional one, and it's a way for the grassroots movement really to get their hands back into keeping the republic. And I say keeping the republic because of that conversation between Benjamin Franklin and Elizabeth Powell. You know, she asked him, you know, what have you given us, a monarchy, republic? And he said, a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it. And keeping the republic, of course, because we're not a pure democracy, is a lot more work than just voting. And what you have proposed is an incredible attempt to get the grassroots involved, and probably one of the few, if not the only way, we can really get the states back involved like they should be.
Without even having to pull guns and
right.
descend upon progressive strongholds or what have you. Correct.
Yeah. Well, it draws a lot of its features from the Article 5 Convention, which is another step up. And what you're with Republic Review, you know, it could lead to Article 5 Convention, it could lead to nullification, it could lead to a number of things, and those things may not even be necessary. Just the Republic Review alone would probably be enough to right. you know, get this situation turned around. And even though, you know, we've got a different president, we still have a lot of work ahead of us, that's for sure.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. So thank you very much for the kind words. I think I might have mentioned this to you, but at the very beginning when I started broadcasting here in February, this was shortly after the inauguration, and shortly mm-hmm. after President Trump had been speaking out, tweeting out, and being visceral towards the judiciary. And one of the things that just came to me is, you've got a trifecta, President Trump. Why don't you go over to Congress, and why don't you just ask them to create a judiciary bill to force the federal courts to put them back into scope of the Constitution? If it is not
sure.
If it is not within the Constitution, those enumerated powers, in other words, you can't review things regarding health care unless it is something that falls within interstate commerce where there's a conflict or something to that nature. In other words, putting them back into the scope and framework
right.
of that.
And even then, even the Commerce Clause, the first move has to be legislative.
Sure.
It only goes to the judicial if the legislative, you know, if it doesn't resolve the dispute between the states.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think it would, you know, be a it would be a time bomb, because when they reel in the judiciary court, so it's kind of a facetious suggestion, because when this Congress reels in the judiciary into the scope of the Constitution, they might actually look over their shoulder and go, "Hey, are we within scope too?" And then they would probably tear up this Judiciary Act and say, you know what, you know, that bell has been rung, the genie's out of the bottle, and we're not willing to put it back in the bottle. And that,
well, you know, and one of the things I pose to my listeners on my radio show often is, you know, either they're ignorant or, see, they're either ignorant, they're fearful, or they're complicit. It's one of the three.
Right. I like to use another term that I honestly think that there are people that are evil that, you know, will say, you know, in the middle of the day, my, when we're looking up at the sun, they'll say, my, the moon sure is bright tonight. And, you know, in dealing with some folks, you know, it's like they know that they're looking at the sun, but they will never admit it. You know, I've listened to some progressives that have, mm-hmm. you know, when you've held them down academically, they just have no wiggle room, but they will still deny the truth.
Right.
And so I still think there's that evil element as well.
I've seen that, and yeah. I don't know if it's evil or just absolute refusal to admit that what they've been believing for as long as they have could possibly be wrong.
Right.
Even if you prove it so, yeah.
Right. Well, okay, so Thank you for your thoughts and feedback on that premise. But I had another idea that I've been putting out there, and I've been floating the thoughts of republicanism. And I actually dedicated several shows to going through the history of republicanism and what the framers did in setting up an American style or our constitutional style of republicanism by acknowledging that we have two sovereigns, the people and the states. And as you can hear, there's some music coming in. So I have a hard break here. So let's go to the break and we'll come right back and I'll give you this thought I had on republicanism, and then we can get into some other things that you're doing as well. Thank you. If you'd hold on, thank you very much. And stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back. All right. Well, we're back, and we have Mr. Gibbs on the line with us, and I'll bet you he thought he was living in the Inland Empire.
Well, yeah, I heard there's one up there too. I did hear that before.
Yes. I think sometimes they have to put a spin on it, because I'm not sure if there was a lawsuit or what have you that somebody was trying to brand that down there. They called it first. And anyway, I'm not sure, but I'm going to refer to it because I'm not trying to trademark anything. But anyway.
You guys are Inland Empire Junior.
Yeah. I think they prefer the Inland Empire Northwest. But anyway. Back to what
And if you go a little further west, you got North San Francisco, right?
No.
Seattle's not that bad yet.
Seattle is bad. And as a matter of fact, if you haven't heard, there's legislatures that have a bill and are pushing constitutionally to create a 51st state, in breaking this state in half from the Cascades. So that the eastern side of the state becomes autonomous and a separate state. And in my opinion, that's a good thing. And as a matter of fact, I think more and more states, as we start looking at getting watered down through the immigration and some of these other things, it would behoove of some of these conservative states to split, because then you would increase your representation in the Senate by two.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one way of creating a much greater barrier for these real liberal states to be able to, push the globalist and the progressive agenda down our throats by signing bills and giving our liberties away and so forth. But let me get back.
We thought of something similar down here, but then we realized all we really need is one big quake.
Yes. Let me get back to what I was talking about as far as republicanism. As you know, and as we've discussed before several times, that the Constitution in the Guarantee Clause basically guarantees that the United States government will ensure that every state is Republican in form. And when we understand, as I was before we went into break, that the American version, or the framers, how they framed republicanism with two constituents, is that there needs to be representation of the people and representation of the local, what is it? It's not a municipality. It is a local government. And so in the United States Constitution, that representation of the local government is the states. Within the states, that local government would be counties, or in Louisiana's case, it would be parishes. And so I believe that Congress and President Trump could easily get a bill that basically states that none of the states are compliant to the Constitution, and that you need to align yourself into a Republican form and ensure that the sovereignty of the counties are represented in your legislatures, because that's why we have bicameral legislation. We have a Senate and the representatives of the people. Well, technically, we just have two representatives of the people. And so
the whole point of a bicameral Congress is that the two houses are different from each other. Sort of like the old saying is two heads are better than one.
Right.
Because they're different heads and they see things from a different direction. That's the whole point of a bicameral Congress.
Right. To reel in the potential runaway of a democracy of people giving themselves too much at the expense of the goose that may be laying the golden egg. So my thoughts were, what do you think that is a plausible, or is that just way out there? I mean, I know it's a pipe dream just to get this legislation through, because there's so many rhinos and there are so many pseudo conservatives that wear the Republican label back in D.C. But I think it would be a great opportunity just to prove who is and who isn't, make, you know, bring those votes to the floor, and then we can find out who really does support Republicanism and who are real Republicans and who are not.
Well, the Democrats would be against it, not only because they're not fond of the Constitution anyway, but because also they would lose a lot of representation. I'll give you an example. In California, if we were to become a Republican I don't mean Republican Party. I mean Republican style of system or government. That would mean that the counties would be appointing the state senators. It wouldn't be democratically voted in.
Right.
Well, there's more red counties here than blue counties. So that Senate would flip.
Absolutely.
Now, with that, now, if we were then to also, while we're at it, just for the fun of it, also repeal the 17th Amendment so we can make the federal government republic again.
Well, I'm going to get to that. You don't jump ahead. I've got that here.
Well, the thing is, what would happen is then you would have the legislature choosing those senators.
Sure.
And because one house in the state is red and one is blue, they would probably compromise. So instead of having two senators, California would wind up with one of each more than likely in that scenario.
Correct. And In my opinion, back onto the states, I believe that they don't. So the House and the Senate doesn't need to have a supermajority. It's basically just because this is political in nature. It's not a constitutional amendment. And I think that they could just do a majority vote. It wouldn't require a 60 votes in
so the
Senate.
The Republicans have the votes to do this if they were willing to work together.
Right.
And now the question would be, would it stay that way once we, you know, change the White House?
Right. And so if somebody could get Congresswoman Kathy Roderick McMorris to call in so that we could give her this idea so that she could be the champion of Republicanism and revitalize the Republic just in this manner alone, as Mr. Gibbs just said, you would see dramatic flips in what would be considered lost states like California and even Washington. There are far more red counties than there are blue. If we could get traction on this and get this through the House and over to the Senate and, you know, find out which ones are voting for it, which ones aren't, we have 2 years, folks, to get this through. And if not, then Trump can rally and we can get real Republicans in to replace these ones that don't have the political backbone to do what they're supposed to do. Anyway,
I understand this. The whole reason for that is to combat democracy. The reason why the lost states are solid blue is because of democracy.
Sure, sure. And they're going broke quickly. I believe Illinois is leading the charge, but with California's single-payer system, I think you guys are going to frog leap over Illinois.
We would have to triple our revenue to be able, right now, just instantly triple our revenue just to be able to pay for it. And that's using their conservative numbers. They're talking $400 billion. But when you start talking about the people now coming from out of state to take advantage of it and more illegal aliens and all that, a friend of mine and I sat down and figured it out. We figured it would probably actually wind up costing $900 billion.
Wow.
A year.
That, you know what? If you're a producer in California, you listen to this, you may want to start looking at another place to go to. Vote with your feet.
Yeah.
Vote with your feet. Anyway, so that's, you kind of gave me the segue of what I wanted to talk and ask you about next, but I wanted to give the listeners a little, you know, a more of a macro view, because you and I had a conversation and we kind of talked about this before, and this is when you brought up, because I think you were probably just covering this in one of your classes, because folks, Mr. Gibbs here actually teaches the Constitution to a few different groups down in Southern California, and you brought up that protection clause at the end of the Article 5, where there is an amendment protection that states cannot give up their sovereignty and suffrage without their consent. In other words, an amendment cannot force a state to force them into a democratic form of representation that they have to give their consent. And so I am asking the listeners, go home and read Article 5. And again, Mr. Gibbs had kind of pointed this out, and it kind of created an epiphany as we were talking. And I think our short conversation ended up taking about an hour and a half.
But, longer than that, but we'll go with that.
But the point is, right, you get us started and we can, like I said, we can rip some parchment. I believe that if you look at this protection clause in Article 5 and then you go to the 17th Amendment, and I did the research, go look at the congressional records and look at the debate on the floor over this amendment. They did not know that there was this protection clause in Article 5 because they did not address it. The amendment,
not once.
Right. The amendment only changes the process of how senators are selected. Therefore, because they didn't address and revoke the protection clause as a part of the amendment, any state that has failed to ratify this or rejected this, in other words, I think Utah is absolutely rejected it. And there was one state that rejected it. And then later on, they came back and ratified it, I think in 2002. And I don't know which state that was. But, and doggone it, we're going into another break. So, Mr. Gibbs, if you wouldn't mind, hold on, because this is important. I want to get into this, and I want your opinion on this. So we'll hold on, and we'll be right back after another break. And, folks, please stay tuned. You're going to want to hear this. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're back with Mr. Gibbs, and just before the break, we were discussing republicanism and getting the legislatures, Congress, the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, to get them to pass a bill and have them basically force the states to comply to Article 4, Section 4, the Guarantee Clause. And that kind of segued me into, because he brought, Mr. Gibbs brought up the idea of repealing the 17th Amendment. And I said, well, hold on. And so right before the break, I pointed out that in my previous conversation in preparing for this this call, Mr. Gibbs had brought up the fact that in Article 5, there's a protection clause. And most people, I'm guilty as everyone else, when you read the protection clause, you go, oh, well, it's protecting the shutting down of the slave trade so that the states couldn't quickly assemble an Article 5 process in repealing that 1808 elimination of the slave trade. And if you go beyond that, there's one other clause of protection, and it was the protection of suffrage for the states, that the states could not lose their suffrage because the framers were really aware of the dangers of democracy and how it could destroy this republic that they just took all this effort in creating, and the dual sovereignty of, again, those constituents, as I've been saying. And so in talking with Mr. Gibbs, we kind of said, hey, this might be that actual thing that pours open. So Mr. Gibbs, back to this Article 5 and the 17th Amendment, I am submitting that the states that have failed to ratify and the states that have rejected this, and Utah is the first, I think they're the only ones that have rejected it, but I don't believe Hawaii or I don't believe Alaska has ratified. So, and I don't think Hawaii will, but Alaska's a good
candidate. Arizona wasn't a state yet, and I don't think they ever did. I mean, you know, we can go on and on and on.
But
I've been actually talking about this for years with my students, and yeah. I've been surprised that whenever I talk to constitutionalists, none of them have really caught on to this before.
Right. So here's the thing that in my due diligence in researching this, I noticed that Maryland was the state that had rejected this. And in 2002, they went ahead and ratified this. And there were a few other states that have ratified since then, and I believe that they did that deliberately, and I think the progressives have did that in getting some of these other states, hey, you need to ratify this, because when people look over their shoulder, hey, we don't have 38 to consensus, because every constitutionalist that I know, this is, if you had a wish list, this is number one, as you were mentioning during the break, this is their top priority. repeal the 17th Amendment. I believe that all the states, again, they can basically shut scuttle their election process, and the legislatures can go back to appointing Utah, Florida, and there's a few others that can go back to appointing their senators. And because I believe, is there not precedence now, or, and I hate using that word precedence, but I don't think there's anything within the bill that states that you can unratify or not ratify or change your position. And because the government and Congress accepted the fact that Maryland has changed their position from rejecting to accepting, well, why can't some states that now reject this, because I believe Oklahoma, I believe Texas, I believe there's several states that would be willing to go back and say, we want to unratify or de-ratify, you know, this amendment because we're not on board with it anymore. Why can't they just do that?
Well, they can. Actually, because of the nature of this particular amendment. Now, that said, when I talk about the 17th Amendment being an unconstitutional amendment for the most part, people bring up, well, yeah, because, you know, Philander Knox deemed it, you know, ratified before all the ratification was in. And actually, two states had ratified it but didn't follow their own rules. So there was questions about whether or not the ratification of it was right, or was just deemed, you know, ratified.
Right.
But that said, getting real quick for the listeners, for those of you who are not familiar, the 17th Amendment changed the Senate. The senators used to be appointed by the state legislatures. When they got to the point where they became voted in, no different than the House, now you've got a bicameral Congress with two houses that have no difference, other than maybe how long they serve and a couple of authorities. And so, why is that a problem? The founding fathers understood that the states are constituency just like you and I are, and they wanted to make sure that was protected. And so at the tail end of Article 5, where they were listing our amendments not allowed, they wrote that without his consent, that no state without his consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Well, if that's the case, then that means that any state that did not ratify, did not buy into the 17th Amendment, is not required to have their senators voted in by a democratic process. They could continue to, they can continue to, or reinstate putting their own senators based on the legislature appointment. They
right.
can do that. Why? Yeah. Because they can't lose that without their consent. They didn't give their consent to have their senators voted in democratically.
Right.
And I would say that really this was an amendment that required 100%, you know, ratification. Really.
Right. Correct.
So, you know, that's my position. It's an so now here's the thing. How do you use that in today's mishmash of political ideologies and interpretation, and suddenly the judiciary thinks they're the rule of law? You know, how do you get that across and get the states to understand you guys were scammed?
Right.
You lost your equal suffrage without your consent.
Well, not only that, because let's go back to, because you mentioned it, the state has the responsibility of the appointments and treaties and the ratifying of treaties and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so the states would understand the magnitude and the impact of some treaties, what they would lose, it would hurt them economically and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so by allowing lobbyists and globalists and big money to come in and cross boundaries into a state and to affect an election by pouring $12 million for Cantwell in Washington in this last election, where, you know, the local challenger could barely even get $1 million. The fact that that money came in out of state, who's buying these people so that they can get the treaties and the legislation and the appointments that they want? I mean, think about this.
Well, and that's almost ironic, because the excuse for the necessity of the 17th Amendment is that was an excuse that the corporations were bribing the legislators on who they appointed. But see, the 17th Amendment introduced, this is the way I explained it in my classes, the 17th Amendment introduced ideology.
Yes.
into the Senate. But beforehand, it was about what was best for the state. What,
right.
Do you think that, you know, my state, a Kamala Harris or a Feinstein or Boxer, I can't remember which one's left anymore, do you think they care about what's best for the state? No, because the state didn't appoint them.
Correct.
They, what they care about is their ideology. It
Correct.
Introduced ideology into the Senate.
Correct. And they want to ensure that, and that's why they've basically been voting for climate change and the globalist agenda, so that we become subjugated. We're being held accountable to a global agenda, vice what is best for us and our republic. Putting aside, you know, the progressive agenda just for a minute, do you need a bureaucrat in D.C. that's 2,000-3,000 miles away from you to make a decision on what kind of businesses you can run in your state? Absolutely not. And so when they sign these treaties, or when they try to appoint the heads of executive departments and those types of things, all they're doing is ensuring that their agenda can go forward. It looks like, and I wanted to say this earlier, we didn't even get a chance to finish this as I was anticipating. Can you come back next week?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so folks, and we'll have Mr. Gibbs back.
We've been sold a bill of goods. And that's why my first book was 25 Myths right. The United States Constitution.
Well, we're out of time. Tune in next week, and we will finish this conversation. Thank you, and this is Reclaiming the Republic.